From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting near San Antonio, Texas, Sunday. A lone gunman wearing tactical gear and armed with an assault rifle opened fire on worshipers at the First Baptist Church of Sutherland Springs. Greg Abbott is the state's governor.
Unfortunately, I'm sad to tell you to confirm, at least at this moment in time, there are 26 lives that have been lost. We don't know if that number will rise or not. All we know is that's too many. And this will be a long-suffering mourning for those in pain.
Regional Department of Public Safety Director Freeman Martin said several were wounded.
We have approximately 20 that are transported to local and in hospitals in San Antonio with injuries that vary from minor to very severe. We know the ages range from 5 years old to 72 years of age.
The suspect is identified as 26-year-old Devin Kelly, who reportedly had been dishonorably discharged from the military. He also died, but it's not yet known how. The motive for the mass shooting is also unclear. President Donald Trump said he's monitoring developments from Japan.
All of America is praying to God to help the wounded and the families of the victims. We will never, ever leave their side.
The shooting comes just 5 weeks after the deadliest mass shooting in modern U.S. history, when 58 were killed by a lone gunman in Las Vegas, Nevada. In Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, at least 7 people were killed in clashes between Congolese troops and followers of a renegade army officer. An army spokesman said the clashes began after police tried to disarm the former officer, Abbas Kayonga, who was fired from his post last week for serious breaches related to anti-fraud efforts at local mines. This is VOA News. Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman Sunday ordered the arrest of several officials, including billionaire Al-Walid bin Talal, a nephew of King Salman, in what is called an anti-corruption crackdown. But Middle East Institute scholar Zubair Iqbal said this is really part of a battle between conservatives who rule by consensus and younger, more liberal members of the Saudi royal family.
The family has been broken up in two parts. The old traditionalists who believe in consensus and in taking decisions after considerable degree of discussion with each other.
The purge also targeted the head of the National Guard, who was also detained. Lebanon's Hezbollah group has accused Saudi Arabia of forcing Prime Minister Saad Hariri to resign. Mr. Hariri announced his resignation Saturday after blaming Iran and its proxy militia Hezbollah, citing its grip on Lebanon. Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah Sunday appealed for calm until reasons for Mr. Hariri's resignation become clear. President Donald Trump is holding talks with Japanese officials. North Korea and its nuclear missile threat is expected to be high on the agenda. Earlier, he met with Japanese business leaders.
I know many of the leaders in this room have helped build Japan into the center for commerce and innovation that it is today, and I want to commend you for your incredible achievements in so many areas. And I looked at a list of the people in the room. They are truly the leaders of industry. I congratulate you all.
Mr. Trump will all travel to South Korea Tuesday, then on to China, Vietnam, and the Philippines. Catalonia's ousted leader, Carles Puigdemont, and 4 other former ministers have been released by a Belgian judge after turning themselves in after Spain issued an arrest warrant on charges of rebellion, sedition, and misuse of public funds. They've been ordered to remain in Belgium until an extradition hearing. Monash University analyst Stuart King called it a clever move by Puigdemont, who has publicly stated a lack of faith in Spanish justice.
He is, one, internationalizing the event of his eventual arrest, which he knows is going to come, and 2, he's putting his hands in a justice system which he says is more trustworthy than the Spanish one, which is the Belgian one, which of course is, you know, with Brussels as the capital of the European Union.
Puigdemont went to Belgium after Spain dismissed his government following last week's declaration of independence. In the eastern Syrian city of Deir ez-Zor, a suicide car bombing Saturday killed and wounded dozens of displaced Syrian refugees just a day after the government of Damascus declared victory over Islamic State in Deir ez-Zor province. Prominent Venezuelan lawmaker Freddy Guevara has sought refuge in the Chilean embassy in Caracas over allegations of instigating violence. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Monday, November 6th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Today, Monday, is Judgment Day in Liberia, as the Supreme Court is set to decide on a challenge to the October 10th election.
The Supreme Court can determine Monday morning that a petition filed by Liberty Party is denied and the runoff should take place. Or the Supreme Court can say that the petition is granted, which means that the runoff should not take place.
Tiamo Gonglo is the former Solicitor General of Liberia. Zimbabwe human rights lawyers are in court today to seek the release of an American citizen for allegedly retweeting a post which calls President Robert Mugabe a sick and tired leader. And more protests are expected today in Togo and tomorrow and Wednesday as the government lifts a ban on weekday protests.
We think that it's a victory for us because what was at stake is to succeed in maintaining this constitutional right to protest when we want.
Bridget Ajamabo is the coordinator of a coalition of 14 political parties leading the protest in Togo. The European Union urges South Sudan's warring parties to commit to implementing the August 2015 agreement. And we'll look at the impact of the high cost of vanilla on Madagascar's economy. Those stories, plus Samson O'Malley's sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Today, Monday, is Judgment Day in Liberia as the country's Supreme Court is set to decide on a challenge to the October 10th presidential first round election. The court last week ordered the country's Elections Commission to stay all actions pertaining to the November 7th runoff elections. This came after three political parties led by Charles Bramskin's Unity Party filed a petition for a writ of prohibition because of what they said was a violation of the Constitution and also a gross irregularities during the October 10th first round election. Tiawong Gonglo is the former Solicitor General of Liberia. He says the court can either deny the petition, thereby paving the way for the runoff to take place, or it can agree with the petitioners, which means the runoff will be delayed until the Elections Commission hears the petitioners' complaint.
The Supreme Court can determine Monday morning at 10 a.m. that a petition filed by Liberty Party is denied and the runoff should take place. Or the Supreme Court can say that the petition is granted, which means that the runoff should not take place before the matter before the hearing officer of the Elections Commission is concluded. Those are the two possibilities.
So the merits now, Councillor Charles Bramskin of the Liberty Party, joined by the ruling Unity Party and the other parties that lost to Josh Weah's coalition in the first round, they have complained of massive irregularities. I'm sure you are aware that the Elections Commission said it has made a presentation with the court. Is that correct?
Well, I was in court when the argument was heard. The case before the Supreme Court is not on the merit of the case that is before the Elections Commission. What is before the Supreme Court is whether or not the runoff should take place before the matter before the hearing officer of the Elections Commission is concluded. So the relief that Liberty Party is seeking is to stop the rerun until this matter is concluded. Liberty Party argued that for the runoff to go on would be prejudicial. In fact, their complaint that there were massive irregularities and fraud has already been decided. Because then there will be a rerun and someone will be declared winner. What the matter that Liberty Party carried before the Elections Commission is still pending. Of course, the law under Article 3 of the Constitution provides that when an election takes place on the second Tuesday in October, if no one wins an absolute majority, a second ballot should take place in the second Tuesday following the declaration results. And the declaration results should take place not later than 15 days after balloting takes place. Now, that is where the confusion is, whether or not where there is runoff and there is complaint, the runoff should take place. I believe the issue of the complaint, why there is runoff, may not have been contemplated. The Constitution just said if there is no winner, then there should be a second ballot. So the question is where there is a complaint, and there are two front runners, whether or not runoff should take place while the complaint is being determined. Liberty Party says no. The Election Commission says yes. So that is the matter that the Supreme Court is supposed to decide.
Councillor Gonglo, and now, so you have, say, the president of Liberia, she made a comment that she believes that the elections should take place within the confines of the Constitution of Liberia. The Elections Commission has gone before the court and have said that while there were one or two challenges or difficulties in the October 10th election, they did not amount to fraud or an intention to target any particular political party. So if the election is to be held within the confines of the Constitution, is it likely to say that the court is going to side with the Elections Commission?
Well, we will see what the court will say Monday morning, because the court is the final interpreter of the law, especially constitutional matters. Whatever the Supreme Court says is the interpretation of the Constitution, and what the Liberian people meant in writing Article 3 of the Constitution will be what everyone in Liberia will be guided by.
Tiawon Gonglo is the former Solicitor General of Liberia. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. Togo's 14-party opposition coalition says its demonstrations planned for tomorrow, Tuesday and Wednesday, will take place now that the government has lifted a ban on weekday protests. The parties have been demonstrating to demand a return to the country's 1992 constitution, which calls for a 2 5-year term limit for presidents. They also want President Fortunato Simbe to step down. The government last week said it was ending the ban on weekday protests after meeting with civil society and political party leaders, and also to avoid deaths and injuries that have been associated with the protests. But Bridget Ajamagbo, coordinator of the coalition leading the protest, says the government's reversal is a victory for the opposition, which had insisted all along that it had a constitutional right to demonstrate.
We think that it's a victory for us, because what was at stake is to succeed in maintaining this constitutional right to protest when we want by following what the law asks for. That's why we said that we will not accept this ban. We think also that it is a sign that we must continue to resist to this government, and we will get finally what we want. We will succeed on putting to the end this regime, which has been there for 50 years.
The government minister of security said that this was a decision reached between the government and the opposition to avoid many people being killed. But does the opposition see this as a victory for your cause?
We see it as a victory. We have been demonstrating very peacefully. And what happened on the 18th and the 19th of October showed that this is the government that has some Togolese people who have been armed by the government to make violence in the country. And as for us, as opposition, we have been demonstrating peacefully.
Does this mean now that the demonstrations that are planned, say, for tomorrow, Tuesday, and Wednesday, are those demonstrations going to take place?
They will go to take place. And what we did is that even during this last weekend, we went through all the country. We went to talk to people. We had meetings with people in the cities to explain to them that they have to continue to resist and that they have to come out on the 7th, the 8th, and the 9th for this big protest. And we are confident that many Togolese will be on the road again.
Bridget, I wanted to ask you, your president, Fortunato Simbe, was in Liberia this past week. As you know, Liberia is supposed to be having a runoff election, and your president was there in Liberia with the Guinean president, Alpha Conde, representing ECOWAS. What do you make of that?
You know, we were very surprised to see that he went in Liberia to try to solve the problem that came out from the election there. We think that he is not a good example, and he does not have this moral authority to to intervene in this kind of problem. He would rather use this time and this energy to solve his own problem he has at home.
Bridget Ajamagbo is coordinator of a coalition of 14 political parties leading the protest in Togo. She was speaking with me from Atamabe, Togo's fifth largest city. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Monday, November 6. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 16 minutes past the hour. Human rights lawyers in Zimbabwe are expected today, Monday, to ask the country's high court to release an American citizen who has been in custody since Friday last week for allegedly retweeting a post saying President Robert Mugabe was a sick and tired leader. Meanwhile, and as Sebastian Mofu reports from Harare, the 93-year-old Mugabe says he wants his vice president Emmerson Mnangagwa out of the ruling ZANU-PF party.
In an interview with VOA, Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights spokesperson Kumbirai Mafunda said the American Martha Donovan, who is facing charges of subversion and insulting President Robert Mugabe's authority after she allegedly retweeted a post saying the 93-year-old leader was sick and tired, would seek bail at the High Court this Monday.
Our lawyers are working on a bail application seeking an order for the release of Martha O'Donovan, who was detained in prison after the magistrate's court refused to grant an application for an order seeking her release after our lawyers had indicated that she had been arrested and detained illegally. So she is in prison, in remand prison, and the traditional lawyers are working on filing a bail application in the High Court seeking her release on bail.
The 23-year-old American has been in custody since her arrest in a dawn raid of her house on Friday. In court on Saturday, she dismissed both charges as, quote, baseless and malicious, unquote. Police say they have been monitoring her since September, and they have it on solid ground that she wanted Zimbabweans to rebel against President Mugabe. The 93-year-old Zimbabwean leader, meanwhile, wants his ally Emmerson Mnangagwa relinquish the post of vice president. Over the weekend, Mugabe had this to say of his longtime ally and his sympathizers.
Final decision, because I am annoyed.
All this nonsense. You prepare to form your own party?
We can't have you insulting us a day in, day out. Okay? Go your way. We go our way.
President Mugabe, who has ruled Zimbabwe since 1980, when the country got its independence from Great Britain, has indicated that he wants to replace Mnangagwa with his wife, Grace Mugabe, as vice president of Zimbabwe in December, when the country's ruling party meets ahead of 2018 elections. Mugabe, who turns 94 in February next year, wants to contest in Zimbabwe's 2018 elections expected around mid-year. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
The European Union is asking the warring parties in South Sudan to show commitment to the IGAD-led initiative to revive the August 2015 peace deal. The head of the EU delegation to South Sudan says the EU has agreed to fund the revitalization process. Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Speaking to reporters shortly after meeting with the South Sudan Cabinet Affairs Minister Martin Elia Lomuro, head of EU delegation to South Sudan Stefano Di Leo said the South Sudan government and parties to the agreement have no other option but to revive the 2015 peace deal.
The revitalization is the only chance to reach peace in this country. We are fully backing the process, but our backing is not only by words. The European Union and its member states are funding and supporting politically and financially the process because we fully believe that this is the way forward.
The transitional government of national unity has on several occasions blamed the international community for not providing funds for implementing the peace deal. But De Leo says the European Union is not convinced the warring parties are serious about ending the conflict in South Sudan. He says South Sudan government forces, their militias, and rebel fighters must all silence their guns before the EU provides any more funding.
What we want to see is, first of all, a ceasefire that is working. This would be a big achievement. And we look at this. So we fully support every movement and every discussion that leads to a ceasefire. This is the basis of every other understanding.
De Leo says the international community also wants to see South Sudanese authorities provide unfettered access for the delivery of humanitarian services across South Sudan. The regional bloc IGAD is expected to announce a timetable for the new round of talks between the warring parties in yet another attempt to revive the Seki 2015 peace deal. Lomro issued this warning to South Sudanese authorities who are blocking humanitarian aid workers.
And I want to take this chance to tell our governors in all the states, the leadership of the national security of the army in the states, that once General Majer has issued a document clearing agencies to take humanitarian assistance to whatever area they say they should go, none of you has the authority to stop it. And we're taking this very serious because humanitarian access has become our problem and is being politicized.
Yei River State Governor David Lokonga ordered all non-governmental organizations operating in his state to submit their work plan and annual budget to his office. Some humanitarian aid workers in Yei consider the governor's directive as an impediment standing in the way of the work of aid workers. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
As the price of vanilla continues to skyrocket from around $200 per kilo a year ago to currently over $600 per kilo, impacts can be felt in Madagascar. The island nation produces between 70 and 80% of the world's vanilla. Nathaniel De La Fiole is the CEO of La Faza, a sustainable vanilla trade company. He spoke to Ricky Stryak about what the price increase means for local farmers.
Prices have been on the rise for vanilla for several years now, maybe as much as sort of 4 or 5 years as a general trend. And certainly over the last 2 years, it has really risen dramatically without any pause. So yeah, it's really changed the market. It's obviously it's a very popular flavor in the U.S., in the whole world. And so this is starting to have some meaningful impact in the food industry. And so when the market changes for this commodity, Madagascar is always central to that change and to the issues surrounding it, whether it's based around supply out of the country of Madagascar, harvest dynamics, crop quality, things like that. It really plays into the entire world supply chain for vanilla beans. So it's a pretty critical issue what's going on in Madagascar in terms of what that commodity price is doing worldwide.
In terms of the cyclone that happened earlier this year, is it true that it destroyed around 30% of the country's vanilla crop? And what impact did that have on local farmers as well?
You know, the cyclone that came in March was a pretty strong storm. It was a Category 4 cyclone. Thankfully, it didn't have a massive footprint like some of the storms we've seen recently hitting different geographic areas of the world. But it was quite a strong storm, and it made a direct 90-degree hit right at the heart of vanilla production territory in Madagascar, so right between the cities of Antala and Sambava, which is about as central to the Madagascar vanilla industry as you can get. It is still, I would say, a bit unclear as to just how much damage to the crop occurred during the cyclone. I've heard anywhere from 20% to 30% of the, you know, sort of the country's crop was affected. Now, the question is, was it destroyed entirely or not? And I think there's a lot of evidence to suggest that at least some of the vanilla beans that were growing at the time were still able to be harvested and then cured into finished vanilla.
In terms of the vanilla economy, let's say, in Madagascar, are they mostly coming from big companies or Do small farmers see some of this profit?
Yes, and it's a great question. And I do end up talking about this issue quite a bit off and on, because it is a very it is a very smallholder farmer driven crop in Madagascar. There are some larger plantations for sure. There are some production sites that depend on day labor. And that's certainly been a part of the industry for decades. However, most of the Madagascar crop is really produced by smallholder farmers.
Nathaniel De La Fiole is the CEO of La Faza, a sustainable vanilla trade company. You're speaking to Ricky Stryak. And now for Daybreak Africa Sports, here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Good Monday morning to you, Samson.
A very good Monday morning to you, James. We begin in the U.S. and in New York, where Kenyan two-time world half marathon champion Jeffrey Kamwuro cruised to his maiden marathon victory when he triumphed at the New York City Marathon on Sunday. Kamwuro broke away from a bunch of four rivals with 3 kilometers to go to win in 2 hours, 10 minutes, 53 seconds. The 24-year-old, who had finished second in 2015 behind Stanley Biwott, broke away from Wilson Kipsang Kiptotich and Ethiopians Desisa Lilisa and Lemi Bahanu Hale to record a hugely satisfying victory. Kipsang finished second in 2 hours, 10 minutes, 56 seconds, just 3 seconds behind Kamwuro, as Didisa finished in 3rd place ahead of Bahanu Hale. In the women's category, Shalane Flanagan became the first American woman to win the New York City Marathon in 40 years when she claimed a dominant victory over Kenyan 3-time champion Mary Kitani on Sunday. Flanagan's time of 2 hours, 26 minutes, 53 seconds was quick enough to beat the 3-time defending champion Mary Kitani of Kenya and became the first American woman to win since Mickey Goman in 1977. In basketball news, Mali's women and Nigeria's men made history after winning the first ever edition of the FIBA 3x3 African Cup, which took place in Lome, Togo, which ended on Sunday. Mali had a perfect 6-0 record, beating Nigeria in the 12-11 thriller, where Mali top scorer Djineba Ndiaye had a game high of 5 points. However, Nigeria's basketball senior men national team, the Tigers, defeated Congo by 21 points to 9 to pick the men's title. Azoma Dike won the Most Valuable Player award, beating Ivory Coast Sisiane Taure and Eli of Madagascar. In rugby news, Kenyan rugby has suffered yet another loss following the death of Kenyan Simba player Mike Okumbi on Saturday night. Mike Okumbi, together with his wife Mary Ann Wombi, were attending a friend's party when the wife took a knife and stabbed him on the left side of his chest following a disagreement. Police confirmed that the Simba striker was rushed to a hospital but pronounced dead on arrival. Police are looking for the wife, who fled immediately after the crime. And now to football news. Moroccan club Wydad Casablanca secured a first African Champions League title in 25 years as Walid El Kati's second half goal secured a 1-0 win over record 8-time winners Al Ahly on Saturday. Wydad won the tie 2-1 on aggregates to end their long wait for a second win in Africa's elite club competition, with victory coming in front of the Arankara's home supporters, who booed every touch of the ball from Ahly players. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The Democratic Republic of Congo's long-awaited presidential elections have been scheduled for December 2018, the Electoral Commission president announced on Sunday. And that is it for this Monday, November 6th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beck, for reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Barton in Washington, hoping you have a productive week.
Interested in deeper analysis of news and events in Africa? Then plan to join me, Douglas Impuga, on Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. So plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.